Representative Ed Case was in town over the 4th of July holiday. We sat down with him to reflect on his first 6 months of his latest term in our nation's capital and his position on the powerful Appropriations Committee.
You know, for me, this is my third tour of duty, so to speak, in Washington, D.C. I mean, I went to Washington, D.C. as a summer intern for Spark Matsunaga, then U.S. House member Spark Matsunaga, my predecessor representing the 1st Congressional District, 44 years ago. And I spent 3 years on Capitol Hill from the age of 22 to 25 then, half of it in the U.S. House, half of it in the U.S. Senate. I decided that that was a career I wanted to pursue. You know, long story short, that took me back to Congress in 02. I've served 02 to 07, so 4+ years, very, very full 4+ years. You know, ran for Senate, did not prevail in that race, went back, came home, lived a normal life, if you want to put it that way, for 12 years of great practicing law and then working for Outrigger Hotels, which I loved doing. But what really happened was that I watched the country deteriorate. I watched the political debate deteriorate. I watched Congress deteriorate. I watched this incredible divisions coming in. And in that, I wasn't different from any other American, I don't think. And then I got wrapped up in a group called the Reformers Caucus, which is a collection. And this was only just last year. It was and remains a group of former members of Congress on a bipartisan basis, former members of Congress, cabinet officials, ambassadors, senators, governors, you know, folks that have been involved in government. And the commitment of the Reformers Caucus was to reform government, to try to bring it back closer to the people, to try to end some of this division. And I became involved with them early on in 2018 as the congressional race was already underway. And at some point, I just thought to myself, well, you know, if I'm going to get back involved in politics, I'd rather do it from the inside. And that took me to running for this particular election. Now, that has taken me right into now in my first 6 months, because that was my number one focus, remains it. Can we find a better way forward for our country? Can we, in fact, reform our Congress? Can we, in fact, reconnect with kind of the you know, the foundations that we all want as Americans? And that has to do with many, many areas. Campaign spending and campaign finance reform is number one. That was my very first priority. HR1, which is the most widespread reform of campaigns and government ethics that in a generation, actually two generations since Watergate, was passed by the U.S. House. That was a major accomplishment, I think. It stalled in the Senate right now. There are a number of other areas that all relate to can we get more unity on some of these incredible issues that we're facing right now, whether it be, you know, immigration, whether it be foreign policy, whether it be social security solvency. All of these things have kind of driven me back in here. And after 6 months, you know, there's some light at the end of the tunnel, but it's obviously a mixed bag. I mean, the division is deeper than when I went the first time as a congressman. But there are things that actually can be done to start to chip away at that.
Now, you managed to get on two really important committees, appropriations and the environment. You were concerned about funding for the military's water system. At Pearl Harbor, we just had a major break, and we just had a recent one up at Tripler.
So this is actually a very instructive story, especially the water main break for the military coming out of Wyava, which is their main water supply to Pearl Harbor and all of the military installations that are on or related to Pearl Harbor, plus many, many civilians. So we're talking 100,000 people that depend on one water pipe from Wyava coming down. And that water pipe, everybody has known that it needed to be replaced, and it was already in the pipeline, so to speak, for funding. So the funding was actually appropriated. So not just authorized, but appropriated. The difference there is authorized means, yes, you can do it. Appropriated means, okay, you're going to do it, and here's the money. The money had already been appropriated for that. The project is about a $78 million project. And this is military construction money, which falls directly within my Appropriations Committee Subcommittee on Military Construction and Veterans. That's one of my key subcommittees, where there's 10 of us out of 435 in Congress that are responsible for divvying up a huge amount of funding for those areas. Right in the middle of that project actually being contracted for, President Trump determined that he wanted to divert all currently appropriated monies for military construction, or not all, but much of it, to his border wall on the basis of it being an emergency funding. Now, we can debate whether their border wall needs to be built or not. I'm fine debating that. And we can also debate whether it's an emergency. The key here was that Congress had already appropriated the money. It was already allocated to that project, and he proposed to divert it. Now, I said that that was wrong in committee. I flew home, and the next day that water main breaks. So proof in the pudding right there.
And you went out and toured that site.
And
you
out and toured that site. And I said, hey, this is a good example of what we're talking about. I mean, these are priority projects that we have already appropriated money to. And I wasn't the only project in the country. There were other really key projects across the country. Anyway, that battle is still in some ways being waged. But what happened along the way was that we accelerated the actual letting of that contract so that it was no longer subject to the potential diversion of the monies. That was just a matter of, getting into the weeds, really, and telling the military, hey, move this along as fast as you can and contract that out. And so it actually is now fully contracted. But the postscript to the story is that the battle was taken into the courts as to whether President Trump had the authority to divert money already appropriated by Congress. And the courts have just ruled that the answer is no. And so he is actually under an injunction as we speak, that says you cannot divert any of those monies.
Right. So whether it's for the Wyava pipeline or some other
there are other key projects right here in Hawaii that remain on the chopping block. So those are monies that have been appropriated to military construction, but are on the list for potential diversion to the border. Those are all now going to proceed to the projects as appropriated, which I think is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I know. I just happened to be somewhere the day they announced that they had that water main break up at Tripler, and that they were closing down the VA clinic. And a gentleman next to me goes, how can they close that down? How can they close down, you know, part of the hospital? And he was just, you know, incredulous.
Well, you know, people don't realize how much we really rely upon basic infrastructure, especially in kind of central Honolulu. This is the case all over the state, all over the Pacific, really, if you want to get that far with the military. But let's just talk about the 1st Congressional District, my district for now. We have 110 some odd veterans plus their families in Hawaii, plus veterans from throughout the Pacific that all rely on Tripler and the VA facilities there for their health care. And that's before we even talk about non-veterans that rely upon Tripler for their health care. It is a huge facility. It is central in the Pacific. It is one of the highest rated hospitals, you know, between California and really a long way out to include Japan. So it's incredibly important, but it depends on an aging infrastructure. And this is true, by the way, not just of Tripler, but of many of our military facilities. We've spent a lot of money over the last 10 or 20 years to upgrade our military housing for our families. We have many new projects sprinkled throughout our military installations, whether it be the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, the Coast Guard, and a NOAA, which is an armed service, not an armed service, but the uniformed service as well. But underneath that all, we have an aging infrastructure. It's really a World War II infrastructure that's never significantly been upgraded. So we're talking pipelines and sewers and, you know, stuff that's underground that you've got to worry about. Otherwise, it cripples your entire operation.
Have you had a chance to go out to see the Red Hill facility?
Absolutely.
And what
I've been
are your
in
thoughts
there twice.
On that?
I think that this is a very, very difficult issue right now. I think two things about it. The first thing is that it's an absolutely critical facility for our military defense. It is people. I think that many people do not realize how important it is to our military's functioning throughout the Indo-Pacific region. It's the largest, by far, storage facility anywhere between the mainland United States and well again beyond, you know, Japan.
It fuels the entire Pacific Fleet.
It fuels the entire Indo-Pacific. So we're talking not only about the Pacific Fleet, we're talking about a lot of other stuff that it fuels. So, for example, it fuels the Coast Guard here. It is utilized as an emergency storage for the state of Hawaii and has been used that way when we've had issues. So it is available for purposes well beyond the military. But let's just focus on the military.
Right, national security.
Absolute national security in an era when we're just very, very consciously having to deal with, you know, China and the next generation of China, which is a whole nother area that I've been very, very much focused on. Compare that against the fact that the reality is that the facility does sit over the Honolulu aquifer. And so if there is a major leak that does pollute that aquifer, that's a huge issue to all of us that live here in Honolulu. Now, some people want Red Hill just moved right now. I can't get myself to that yet. I've got to go through a more deliberate process of saying, well, if that facility is that important, and if it's going to cost $8 to $10 billion to site it somewhere else that is not as good a overall location for our strategic defense in the world, then I'm going to have to walk myself through a pretty logical series of steps about, okay, can we in fact ensure that it will not leak? Can we, in fact, be comfortable that the steps we've taken to ensure that it won't leak will, in fact, be credible steps, and we can, in fact, monitor and enforce a very safe facility?
Right, and are we moving fast enough?
Absolutely. Now, as things stand right now, the military, through the Navy, who runs the facility, and the State Department of Health and the Environmental Protection Agency, those three parties are all under an agreement which specifies a very concrete series of actions that have to occur to evaluate choices, options, and scientific reality that is going on at Red Hill. And my message to all three of them, and I think I'm on the same page as the rest of the delegation, is you have to meet those deadlines. We have to get ourselves through this very, very important, vital, strict approach to as a practical matter, is there a way that we can ensure safety of Red Hill, or is the reality that we cannot ensure it and therefore we have to move it? And if so, then what do we do? How do we do that?
Do you support the idea of double lining?
I could very well support the idea of double lining, yes. I mean, that's clearly one of the options. I mean, fundamentally, the options are threefold. Number one, that you put advanced state-of-the-art technology on the surface as it stands right now. Number two, double lining. The problem with double lining is, first of all, the main problem with double lining is that it reduces the capacity of the tank significantly. And the military says, and I believe them, that in order for these tanks to actually be able to contribute to national security, they have to have a certain capacity. And so if you reduce the capacity by, I think it's 17% by double lining, you're not at what the military believes they need. In an actual situation where they're going to really need it on a fast basis. And then obviously the last category of solutions is move it. So it's a tough one, and it's one where again I believe that my role here is to monitor the public health and safety and try to accomplish the military's legitimate purposes to provide national defense, but to move everybody through a very, very honest discussion. The other thing I've said to the military straight up pretty honestly is, hey, you got to be open all the way on this. I mean, this has got to be completely transparent. You know, if the first time you misstate what the situation is, you lose that credibility. You're never going to get it back. And we're going to all need you to have a lot of credibility to get ourselves through this process.
That was Representative Ed Case talking about Red Hill and the other types of military's World War II infrastructure that is aging. Tomorrow, we continue our conversation talking about the environment and immigration.